Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. My co-host tonight is Emmy-nominated NBC legal and political analyst Dean Johnson. Dean?
Hey, Jeff, and good evening, everyone. You know, over the past few weeks, we've looked at the social norms that hold society together, and we've been asking the question, are the guardrails coming off? Tonight, we change our tune a little bit, and we look at some of the most important guardrails that protect our citizens and our democracy, namely the laws regarding citizen encounters with police officers. Jeff?
Your encounters with police range from the friendly conversation in passing or consensual contact, where information might be sought, to detention, search, arrest. And all of these are governed not only by social norms, but policies and procedures, and an ever-evolving body of laws with which conduct of civilians, police, or other executive officers are all expected to conform. Dean?
You know, just when a contact is deemed consensual, is it within the lawful authority of a police officer? How do you know when you're free to leave? What are your rights if you're detained? What are your rights if you're arrested, and what's the difference? You know, those who might have committed an illegal act and the innocent alike share an interest in making sure things don't go south. But what principles should guide you? How do you handle yourself? To what extent can you say, hey, wait, and when should you comply, even if you believe the conduct of the officers might be in violation of your legal rights?
Tonight we want to extend our personal invitation for you to call in and share your thoughts, your questions. Give us a call. If you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, call us at 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the local dialing area, you can call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. But remember that just like a doctor can't diagnose your family member based on your phone call, our attorney guests can't provide you with legal advice about a particular case, and the opinions they express might not be those of their respective clients or their employers, but they're all here to help. Dean?
Now, once again tonight, we have an all-star lineup. David Uthman of the Law Offices of David Uthman and the San Francisco Traffic Law Clinic emphasizes criminal and DMV defense and handles matters ranging from traffic tickets to the most serious felonies. But before practicing law, David worked as a peace officer in Santa Cruz County, both as a sheriff's deputy and as a police officer. And joining us also is Dominique Davis, who has been a prosecutor with the San Mateo County District Attorney's Office for 6 years. She's currently assigned to the General Felony Unit and handles all of the felony electronic crimes against children and felony hate crimes for the county. And she's also co-chair of the office's Racial Equity Committee.
So, Dominique, David, welcome to both of you. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you for having us.
Hi, Jeff. Hi, Dean. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here again.
Hi. Glad to have you here. And I'd like to start the conversation just by giving our audience an overview of some of the laws and some of the misconceptions about the law that we have when people encounter police officers. And one thing I noticed back when I was a prosecutor is what I sometimes call the defense bubble theory, which is this notion that everybody walks around with this bubble around you and that the police can't even contact you and penetrate your bubble unless that you're somehow involved in a crime. You're either a suspect or a potential witness or somebody who has evidence. And that's not correct, is it?
No, it's really not correct. But on the other hand, I'd like to point out that really, unless an officer has reasonable suspicion or probable cause or has a warrant, then your encounter with that officer is essentially consensual. So I think that is something that everybody should keep in mind in terms of also wanting to protect your rights. The fact that unless it falls within one of those specific areas, it's a consensual encounter, which means that you can leave or you don't have to go along with the conversation if you don't want to.
So basically what you're saying is that a police officer walking along the street has as much right to come up and talk to you as anybody else. He can say, hey, David, you know, can I talk to you for a minute?
Absolutely. And it's taught as an investigative technique and as a good way to be proactive on their beats. It's a good way to start a conversation and a good way to be engaged and do their job.
But David, Dominique, isn't it kind of a double-edged sword? On the one hand, I walk up to you and say, hey, Dominique, come chat with me for a minute. And you say no, turn your back on me and begin to walk away. Doesn't that make me start to think maybe something's up and start itself giving rise to some suspicions I would have?
Well, I think that that can absolutely be something that a police officer may think, but in their duties, you know, if they don't have reasonable suspicion or probable cause to hold you there longer, you do have the right to turn around and walk away. So a police officer may, based on the way that you react, adjust, and they should adjust the way that they are responding to you. But simply kind of turning around and walking away, not escalating the situation with verbal or physical actions that cause the officer to feel concerned, there's nothing really wrong with that. So I don't think that it's the double-edged sword that you're thinking of. When you turn around and walk away, an officer shouldn't, you know, then tack you to the ground and keep you there.
Probably on the receiving end, it might not be a bad thing to ask them, well, am I free to leave, and get that out front from the beginning?
Yes, I think that that's not a wrong question to ask. You know, when we talk about consensual encounters, the standard is would a reasonable person feel that they were free to leave at that time. And so if you are trying to figure out what a reasonable person, which is just a reasonable person in the community, whether or not they would feel free to leave, go ahead, ask, am I free to leave? And the officer should let you know.
Yeah, and the game changes entirely if the officer says, hey, can I talk to you? And you say, no, I'm really busy right now, officer. And you start to walk away and the officer says, no, I'm really serious. I want to talk to you. Come here. Then we're no longer in the world of consensual encounters, right?
Right. At that point, I think you're leaning towards more of a detention because the officer has told you that you're not free to go at that point.
And it's at that point that the officer has to believe that there's some involvement in a crime here. As they say, foul play is afoot, as they say in some of the case law. And that reasonable suspicion, you know, it used to be back in the day, and correct me if I'm wrong, that reasonable suspicion was basically some articulable fact. You know, the officer could get on the stand and out of his mouth could come words that led one to believe that he had suspicion. But reasonable suspicion now is getting more teeth into it, isn't it? I mean, there's new case law that says, gee, reasonable suspicion really means that a reasonable person would look at this and say, yeah, there's something nefarious going on here.
So I don't know that I didn't mean to cut you off, David.
No,
go ahead.
I don't know. That language to me, suspicion afoot, that's still kind of what my understanding is. I think that given media attention on law enforcement and kind of some changing opinions towards law enforcement, we may be holding them to some higher standards when they are explaining reasonable suspicion. But I don't think that standard has changed.
Does suspicion have to be specific or can be really general? Something smells funny, or do I really have to have some idea of what's afoot or what I'm looking for?
Well, you know, it's really almost a case-by-case analysis that has essentially evolved to that. And probably it's a good idea to maybe throw out some examples of what reasonable suspicion could be. For example, an officer gets a be on the lookout, a bulletin for a burglary that just occurred. And the description of the suspect was a white male in his 40s, 5'10", wearing a black shirt, tan pants. And you happen to be walking down the street and you're a white male somewhere in your 40s and you have a black shirt on and maybe a gray pants. Essentially, the officer could probably articulate that that amounts to reasonable suspicion for a detention, pull up alongside you, talk to you, sort of try to gauge what's going on and investigate, see whether or not there's more to it. And if not, then, of course, you're free to leave. And otherwise, depending upon the circumstances, it could go from there.
And I think there's good reason for that as well. You know, if you are the victim of a burglary or something like that, and the suspect is walking and the police sees them, there needs to be some kind of mechanism for them to be able to investigate whether or not that person is involved. So that standard, there's a reason why it's just basically articulable facts. So there has to be a basis for why you believe this person in this area may be involved in some crime. Otherwise, they would see someone matching a description and they'd have no ability to contact them and investigate whether or not they were involved.
Yeah, and the court, just for our viewers, you know, reasonable is often a code word that you find in case law. And generally, when a judge says reasonable, it means look at all the surrounding circumstances. For example, there was a not so recent, but a United States Supreme Court case where they said an anonymous tip is something that we look at with suspicion because included in the circumstances are the possibility that that tip may be fraudulent and maybe somebody using the police to harass somebody else. So you have to look at all of those factors. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes, it's, I guess, the almost the reasonable peace officer standard, so to speak. But, you know, there's the pendulum swings both ways in the criminal justice system, as all of us know who've been around, you know, long enough. And in the 60s, 70s, it was maybe too many guardrails on law enforcement to the point where they couldn't do their job. And then it sort of shifted to the reasonable police officer standard, but then more modernly, I think, as Dominique said, it's being looked at again, and with the media and the advent of cell phones and the higher level of awareness, I think we're asking more of peace officers nowadays to justify their detentions.
And I think that that, too, is kind of more where I might mention, you know, the phrase double-edged sword. I think that the fact that the media has highlighted kind of the outlier officers, so the bad seat officers, the media focuses on them and talks about them. I think that that sometimes can lead people to react in a way that escalates a situation that doesn't need to be escalated. So if an officer does contact you because you match a description, let's say, and you immediately respond with aggression or, you know, somehow making the situation more volatile than it needs to be, that can lead to a worse situation than if you would just remain calm, let them do their investigation, talk to you, and then let them be on your way. The encounter will be shorter based on how you respond to the officer in that moment.
You know, I'd like to follow up on that. David, you have a very interesting background, having been being a defense attorney and having been a peace officer. What actually goes through your mind when you encounter somebody in a situation like that? What are the things that a citizen who is approached by a police officer can do to make that encounter go well? And what are some of the things that they commonly do that make it go south?
Well, most police officers are trying to do their job, and they're trying to do a good job. And their job is hard. They're going around the community trying to detect crime. So they're looking at everything. They're looking at people. They're evaluating them. They're trying to gauge whether or not they could be involved in some nefarious activity. Actually, when I was a sheriff's deputy once, I was on patrol and I saw a person walking down the street, and he was kind of slightly hunched over and holding on to his abdomen a little bit and walking funny. And so I detained him. And there's also a rule that if an officer detains somebody and they have a suspicion that that person could be armed, they could do a pat down search. I did a pat down search because it appeared to me that he was trying to conceal something in his waistband. Turned out to be some electronic product that he had just stolen from a local store. So, that's sort of the scenario that can happen. On the other hand, as a citizen, you may not want to be involved in this encounter. So if you are detained, or if an officer does come up to you and you don't want to get involved with the officer, the first thing you should do is say, am I being detained, or, can I leave? Am I being detained? And that way it's right out front. If the officer says, yes, you're being detained, then you have some rights that kick in. At that point, you can remain silent. You have the right to remain silent, and you have the right to not consent to a search. Otherwise, if the officer says, no, you're not being detained, you want to go, you go, you walk away.
So does it elevate somewhat the amount of evidence you're going to need, or the level of suspicion if you're going to actually stop and want to search somebody or maybe arrest somebody, from what we've been talking about?
Well, yes. I mean, there are a lot of variables. If you come up to somebody and they're very hostile with you and acting sort of irrational, that could give the officer a further right to detain you and sort of investigate your mental health, your welfare. And then if the person persists in fighting or behavior that's aggressive, the whole thing can spin out of control, and the person could find that they're arrested and charged with resisting, delaying an officer. Whether or not they would actually suffer a conviction is another question. But certainly, how you respond as a citizen will greatly factor into how the encounter goes. I think the best rule of thumb is to be polite but firm in your request. So you don't want to be angry. You don't want to act agitated. You want to be polite. But if you do not want to engage in that encounter, if you don't want to talk, then you just put it right out there. Am I being detained? Can I leave? Otherwise, if you think it's okay to speak with the officer, if you're really not doing anything wrong, it's probably fine to just go ahead and communicate with the officer, and it probably very quickly you'll be on your way. You really have to look at yourself and like what you're doing. Whether or not the level of trust you have in law enforcement is, everybody's different, but certainly there's definitely a strong case to make that if you're not doing anything wrong, probably the best thing to do is to have cooperate, so to speak, be polite, have a quick encounter, and be on your way.
Yeah, you know, I just as a practical matter and not as a legal matter, I often hear officers, and I represent police officers, and obviously as a DA, worked with police officers for years, I often hear police officers talk about the attitude test. And that really makes a big difference, doesn't it?
Yes, the attitude test is real. It's something that is talked about when you're in training, talked about in the academy, and it's not a, you know, it's not a legal standard. And, you know, I don't know that an officer would ever admit on the witness stand that somebody that they were talking to failed the attitude test, but police officers are human, and all of us generally want to be treated with a certain amount of respect and dignity, I suppose. So, yes, attitude test is big. And also, as an officer, if somebody doesn't pass the attitude test, if they're appearing hostile, a lot of times the officer can think that maybe this person is up to no good and want to investigate further. And one last thing about the attitude test. If you are driving and you're stopped by the police, there are many times where the officer is uncertain as to whether or not they're going to write the ticket. And a lot of times they will base it on the attitude test. So it's a good idea to be polite, but again, firm with whatever direction you want to go in.
I want to come back to that, but Jeff, I think we have a caller, right?
That we do. Let me turn it over to our first caller, Freeman from San Mateo. You're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yes, Mr. Hayden. Can you confirm that this is Mr. Jeff Hayden, the man, and not the corporation, also known as Jeff Hayden?
That it is. That it is. I am one. Is there some reason to think differently? Are you not the same person as your person and corporation or trust or whatever?
Mr. Hayden, I am a freeman upon this land, and I expressly do not consent to entering into any contractual relationship with you, with your office, with your guests, with the radio station, with the court system, the criminal justice system, or anyone or anything else just because I'm asking a question on your show.
So ask a question.
You have the absolute right to ask whatever questions you want or not ask whatever you want, but how does that relate to what we're doing tonight? When you get pulled over, is your position that I'm a free man and therefore don't have to answer?
Well, let me explain to you what happened. So I was traveling on a public road with a guest when a law enforcement vehicle put its lights on when there was no emergency. As a courtesy, I stopped and the individual asked for my license, registration, insurance. I told him first, we have to agree that I'm traveling and I'm not engaged in any commercial activity. So under law, under the common law, I'm obviously not driving. And secondly, my name on my license is misspelled, and that's why I don't want to give it to him. It's all in capital letters. And my birth parents, when they gave me a name, they spelled my name with the first letter in capital letters, followed by all letters and lowercase letters. It's not all capital letters. That's a government-issued name. And I told the officer, look, I'm going to cooperate here, okay? I'm going to be nice to you. You pull me over. You don't have any jurisdiction, but I'm going to be cooperative, and I'm going to write my true name on a piece of paper so you can have it properly spelled.
So you passed the attitude test, right?
Well, I don't know. You tell me. I mean, I have constitutional rights. This still is America. We still live in a country that's based on the Constitution of the United States, the Declaration.
Yeah, well, for the time being, we do, yeah.
Well, and as a free man, do you believe that you are subject to the laws of the state of California?
I think the officer is also subject to the laws, and that includes that he has to produce a declaration of authority, that he's an officer, and if he can't produce it, then he's not acting as an officer. He has to give me his bond number so I know what number to file on. He has to show me he has a license, insurance, verifying that he can do business in this jurisdiction. And if he can't produce any of the above, then he cannot make any kind of stop or arrest. And when other officers arrived, I ended up getting cited for driving unlicensed, and I want to know whether or not you know what my sovereign rights are in this situation.
Let me turn it over to my guest, David Uthman. You've been both a peace officer and also represented sovereign citizens. How does Freeman's claims, how do they sound with you?
Well, I understand his basic premise and the feeling that all of us want to be free and all of us want as many reasonable rights as we should have, certainly. But we also have to have order in society. So there's the, you know, there are the codified laws. The thing about it is that you really can't fight the system and win. If you start making demands of the nature that the caller is making, the officer knows that under the law, he really doesn't have to show those items like the bond and whatnot, these things. And so basically, you could end up in a position where you get arrested, where and your day is ruined, even if later you beat the case. But you know, is it really worth it to go through all that, to be arrested, taken to jail, you know, versus understanding that we do have to work within the laws, whether we like them or not? It is tough.
Freeman, a piece of advice, something I figured out when I was in South America in the middle of a revolution: don't argue with the guy who's carrying the machine gun. Just take that with you.
And what my guests are telling you, Freeman, is you may be free, you may have rights, but there's more to the lawful authority of the police officer than they're presenting you with documents for your examination, because frankly, we're not, as individuals, necessarily able to define the terms of that contact with the officer as much as you would like. Dominique, you looked like you had something you wanted to say right before we break.
No, not in particular on that topic. I am a DA, so I try to uphold the laws of California as much as possible. But this was enlightening. The response from Mr. Uthman was enlightening to me.
Freeman, thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights. And Mr. Uthman, you spoke of the way that your attitude really defines a lot. And I think we had a little bit of an illustration of that. Does this have the potential to lead to one of these things that we've all seen that work in the system, where something starts with a fairly benign contact and starts to unfold, and it grows bigger and bigger and bigger, so that we are defending or prosecuting an enormous case compared to the minor nature of what that initial contact was about?
It happens more often than you'd think. Yes, that's common. And again, it really, to a certain degree, you as a citizen, you're in control of that encounter, and you have some control to keep the ball from unraveling. If you're hostile, if you start behaving irrationally, if you put your hands in your pockets and refuse to take them out, if you have things bulging out of your clothes, any number of things the officer can seize upon and start to escalate the situation from the officer's perspective. As I explained in the one example, when I saw that person walking sort of funny, I patted him down for weapons. Turns out I found contraband. He had stolen something. So you need to protect yourself. I mean, especially, in all honesty, if you have done something wrong, be smart, and you don't want to get caught, you should be smart about the encounter and try initially to cooperate and hope that the officer doesn't have more reason to detain you, to pat you down, to discover something, you know, in your possession. An ounce of prevention is a pound of cure. You as a citizen have a lot of control over these situations, more than you would think. And you should be careful.
What David is saying is not intending to advocate wrongdoing or suggest that that's the way to go. But don't wear it on your sleeve when you're walking down the street. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. Tonight, we're discussing the laws and norms governing police encounters and the law of arrest. I'm Jeff Hayden, joined by tonight's co-host, NBC legal and political analyst Dean Johnson, and guests, attorney David Uthman and Deputy San Mateo County District Attorney Dominique Davis. Who better to discuss such situations? Why, that would be you, of course. We've had some problems earlier tonight with the phone lines. They're open and ready for you right now. If you have questions for my guests or wish to briefly share your own experiences, our phone lines are open. Our number is 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. If you're outside the Bay Area, call us toll-free. Our toll-free number, 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And as always, you're not limited to the exact point that we may be in our conversation.
And coming out of the break here, question for Dominique. You know, we all hear the horror stories. We hear the stories about racial profiling in police stops. We hear about the officers who manufacture probable cause. And earlier in the show, you used the phrase bad seed cops. And I know you're on the racial equity committee in the district attorney's office, which I applaud. My question would be, as prosecutors, do you know who those bad seed cops are? And if so, what do you do to filter out their cases?
So I think that generally, I think I want to approach that question in a couple of ways. So I personally, I think that the criminal justice system is just made of checks and balances. So if there are bad seed officers in San Mateo County, but kind of just generally, there are ways that those officers' conduct can be seen, right? So there are officers who, as we've talked about before, most are just trying to do their job. They're trying to protect society. They're trying to stop criminal activity. But of course, as with any profession, there are those who might step over the law, who might be aggressive when not needed to be. And it is a citizen can help us kind of identify those people. And the way that they can help us do that is if you are coming up against an officer who you feel is violating your rights or you feel is being unnecessarily aggressive, don't try to combat them in that moment. Don't go at them toe to toe. Stay calm, as I've said before, get through that situation. And then there are ways that we can figure that out. So whether that be through motions to suppress, meaning maybe a criminal case gets filed because we've read a police report and there's no mention of any violations. And then you have an attorney who can move to suppress evidence based on the officer's conduct. He has to come into court, explain himself, explain his actions, and what he's done in the law. The other way you can deal with it is to report an officer to their investigator or their own agency. Agencies have internal investigations that they can conduct on their officers. We have what is called a Brady list that we put officers on if they have been shown to have been untruthful about something. If that happens, they go on that list, and it could be untruthful or it could be they're found to use unnecessary force. They go on that list anytime they are. Some of them can't be officers anymore because whatever they did is so bad that we can't trust them to take the stand and uphold justice. Some, there may be a minor infraction that still puts them on the Brady list because maybe we are questioning something that they've done. And then we are required to disclose that information to defense attorneys so that they can deal with it, that they know when a officer is on the Brady list and they're defending their client, that they can question the officer about that. We never hide that information. So that's kind of one of the ways, I think I went all over the place with that, but that's one of the ways that we maintain a list of people who may not be out there serving justice in the way that we want them to be.
Much easier to do in a smaller jurisdiction like San Mateo than perhaps in LA County.
I would imagine so, yes.
It sounds to me like you would say that attitudes have changed in the DA's office over the years. I remember when I started many, many years ago, one of my first, literally my first day in the office, I heard a supervising deputy district attorney talk about a ride-along that he had been on with where the officer made an offensive remark about, and very stereotypical remark, about an Asian driver that he had stopped. And this was funny. And this was considered acceptable dialogue in the district attorney's office. I take it that now that we have a racial equity committee and, you know, other programs, I assume, in place, that's all changed.
Absolutely. I think times have just changed generally. As district attorney's offices grow up, the people who fill the offices are of younger generations. It's very important for my office to make sure that we are dealing with racial issues the way that they need to be dealt with. I think in the past, it's either been to act like they don't exist or even to perpetuate them. We now are trying to identify them and make sure that we react accordingly. I am a Black woman prosecutor in my office, and I have always felt that my voice is important here. I've always felt that we as an office want to make sure that our law enforcement agencies, not just the police officers, but also when cases come to us, that we're looking out for racial inequity. If there is inequity, that we are identifying it and that we're doing our best to stop that.
Let me take a caller. We have PJ from San Francisco. PJ, you're on the air and you've been very patient. Thank you. Welcome to your legal rights.
Thank you very much. And first, I'd like to say I appreciate the service of both the district attorney and the officer. The question I have is, in my home, I have an access right to a utility company where there's a pole and they have access rights to come and inspect this pole. As appropriate. So there was once an incident when they came in and asked to be there for 4 or 5 hours at a time without notice, which was kind of inconvenient to me, given situations of personal family interest. And I indicated that this is not an appropriate time. You guys should come back at some other time. And they ended up calling the police. And they indicated to the police that it's an emergency situation, they need to get there, where it clearly was not. So the officers on the scene seem to side with their indication it's an emergency access required, while all the evidence in the case clearly showed it's not. And I wanted to understand my legal rights under those circumstances.
Well, before I turn it over to my guest, I'm not really quite sure the scope of your question when you talk about your legal rights. Is this your legal rights vis-a-vis the police? or vis-a-vis the inspection that others wanted to do? I'm not quite sure.
Well, the fact is that the police and force said they have the legal right to go into my property without my permission, and they will enforce it. So so it is, I guess, the legal right vis-a-vis the police.
And who are the people doing the inspecting? Who entered onto your property initially?
So these are the they didn't enter. They are the utility folks who, or some contractor to the utility folks who deal with the pole.
Were they there to inspect your business, or what was the purpose?
No, this is a resident. It's from a residence, and there is a pole transformer in my backyard.
So it was PG&E. Was it a utility company?
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay. So it was PG&E, and so basically they told you that they needed access to your property, and you said for 5 hours that they wanted access for 5 hours. Is that right?
Yeah. So they said they had to do some work on the pole. And this was not scheduled. They came in unannounced.
And the pole was on your property. Is that right?
That's right.
And did they give you any indication as the nature of the emergency? Did they share that with you, what the emergency was?
Well, they came in and said they have to create some scheduled maintenance on the pole.
Scheduled maintenance doesn't sound like an emergency.
No, exactly. They changed it into an emergency when I said I refused, and I said you have to schedule time. And they called the police, and they said to the police it's an emergency.
It sounds to me like your problem is really with the police, but with the individuals from PG&E and the way that they were conducting by a false report of an emergency.
Well, my issue with the police is that they did not try to understand the situation on whether it's an emergency or not, but sided with the utility company. If they say it's an emergency, and we will enforce, and we will come into the backyard and ensure they will access the place. So don't the police have, in this situation, a duty to assess the situation and make a judgment, or is there legal duty to side with a utility company?
Well, you know, they do need to assess the situation. The problem is that once they make that assessment, if they're siding with PG&E, you and the officer says you must give them access. Mm-hmm. At that point, the government, the officer has lent their authority to PG&E. So you mm-hmm. could at that point say this is government. This is government action. But again, as you know, we've said over and over again, you can't fight with the police. You can't physically fight. You know, all you can do is state your objections. So in a situation like that, you uh-huh. basically at that point, you have to allow the access. However, what you should be doing is you should be documenting everything carefully. Pull out your cell uh-huh. phone, film them, film what they're uh-huh. doing. See the officers, get their badge numbers, get their names. You know, cell phones have transformed the world and transformed the criminal justice system. Everybody is a reporter nowadays, which is a good thing. It's caused a lot of good change. And so basically document, and then after it's over, you use the legal channels. So you PG&E, you can complain to PG&E, you can report, you can file a complaint with PG&E, and also you can file a complaint against the officers if you believe that they made a decision to an incorrect decision that harmed you by forcing you to stay at home and giving these guys access, you could potentially, mm-hmm. you could file a complaint. Now, whether or not ultimately you're successful, that's another question. But I would say that's basically how you'd have to handle a situation.
Right.
Here's a suggestion. Here's a suggestion. Yeah. go and get yourself a doormat like the one that I've got on the threshold to my office. It says, come back with a warrant.
But PJ, well, you have to understand, the officers are not experts in the area. And if they've been told there's an emergency, they're not necessarily in a position to understand what the nature of the emergency is or what's really going on. And it may have looked okay at the pole, but perhaps somebody down the line had lost power and they needed access to the pole to fix it. And you, frankly, nor the police were in the ultimate position to make that assessment at the time. So I think it's one of these situations where you acquiesce to the lawful authority of the officer and then challenge it later. But thank you for joining us, PJ, on your legal rights.
Thank you.
And let me turn it over to Daniel from Oakland. Welcome to your legal rights.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can.
Yeah. Oh, great. I just turned my radio down so I wouldn't get an interference here. I appreciate that last caller's questions and your answers are actually what I'm calling about. And that I've been following on YouTube these auditors, so-called freelance auditors, and while a lot of them seem to be quite provocative and provoking situations with police, I do believe they're trying to make a point on our basic rights, such as detainment and arrest. And importantly, my question is, they seem to be focusing a lot on the idea of providing ID. And a lot of these people are refusing to provide ID. And I don't know, how is that in California? Are we required to provide ID?
So if you have been legally detained, which I know is maybe asking you to make kind of a legal determination, but let's say you are a passenger in a traffic stop, and the officers ask you for ID. The first thing I want to say is, even though to you, you know, you are you, you know yourself, you know what you've done in the world, the officer has no idea who you are. And so in that kind of situation, for their own safety, they want to be able to identify you. And so it is reasonable for them to ask for your identification. And so if you are in that type of situation, so we have talked about consensual encounters. Remember, you know, if am I free to leave? They say yes. You don't need to provide ID. That's a different situation than a traffic stop situation. You may just be a passenger. It doesn't mean you've done anything wrong. But the officer wants to get home at the end of the day. He needs to know who you are. And so, yes, at that point, you are either to provide ID or to identify yourself so they can, you know, run you out and see who you are and make sure you are who you say you are.
Okay, so is it legal or do I have the right to refuse ID?
If the officer has reason to detain you, reasonable suspicion, if it's not a consensual encounter, then that is all you have to do is identify yourself. You don't have to make any further statements and you probably shouldn't. But you, if you're being, as Dominique said, if you're being detained, then you do have to identify yourself and that's it. If you're not being detained, you don't. So I guess the question to the officer should be, am I being detained? Am I free to leave? The officer says, yes, you're free to leave. You don't need to give him your name. If the officer says, no, you're not free to leave, then you have to identify yourself. But after that, that's it.
Okay, well, maybe I'm just pulling at fine hairs here, but if I were to ask the officer, what is your articulable suspicion here, and he cannot provide that, where are my legal recourses there? Do I still need to provide ID?
Unfortunately, you can't demand that of the officer at that time. That is something that the officer would have to justify at a later time. But in that moment, the officer can, in his or her mind, believe that they have reasonable suspicion to detain you, and then they can ask you for identification. They're not obligated to tell you why, although a lot of officers would tell you because they understand that this is a human interaction, and we all want to know why things are happening. So I'd say that a more savvy officer would probably tell you, yeah, this is why. No reason really not to, but they're not legally obligated to.
And Daniel, don't go down that road. It's a very bad idea. Amongst other things, officers don't have to tell you the reason that they're looking into it, why they're trying to get information from you. And they may lead you in a different direction using what's called a ruse. They're going to tell you what they think needs to happen, what they think you need to hear to prime the pump. And now they've got you giving them information you didn't know that they were looking for. It's not a good idea. You can question it later. You can challenge it later. The thing you think of at the spur of the moment is never the solution to your problem. Just don't go there. If you need to use ID, use ID. If you need to ask them if you're free to leave, ask if you're free to leave. But engaging in a conversation when you are the one that's being investigated is usually not a good idea. David, do you agree?
Absolutely. Remain silent. Absolutely. Police officers can lie to you to try to coerce an admission or to gain information. They legally can lie to you. They can engage in ruses, as Jeff says. It's a trap. It can be a big trap, and you don't really know why they're there and what their true motivations are. Best thing is identify yourself, remain silent.
Daniel, thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights. Let me do a real quick follow-up to that. Do you think it would be helpful, given what we've been hearing tonight, to require officers to take some training courses, perhaps at the academy, in improving interpersonal communications or raising consciousness or awareness as ways of de-escalation and potentially avoiding some of these hostile confrontations?
Well, officers definitely learn that both, I think, in the academy as well as just on the job. Many officers, I watch body-worn camera quite a bit, and they do have good interpersonal skills. They approach a situation. They try to be professional, kind. They're trying to get their job done, essentially. And then depending on how the person they're talking to reacts, there can then be an escalation on both sides. So I think that is an important part of police work. If it wasn't happening, my answer to your question would be yes, absolutely. But I think that officers, it's a big part of their training, especially when they're learning from officers who have been doing it quite a long time. That's what I hear, at least, that's kind of the big advice, is to go out, treat people professionally, get the job done, and move on.
Yeah, there used to be a course for law enforcement officers called verbal judo. It's now called tactical communication. And at least up until a few years ago, I don't know if it still is, but it was taught in the Post Academy. And there are lots and lots of statistics that show that those officers who know how to communicate and build a rapport with people on the street are the officers that have the longest and safest careers and tend not to become either victims or defendants during their law enforcement careers.
David, I haven't done anything. I've done nothing wrong. Does that change the scope of any of the answers that you've given?
No, because again, you don't know what the officers are thinking, what information they're acting on. You have no idea. So in general, it's not a good idea to make statements in that environment without really understanding what you're doing. So I'd say it's best to not make statements.
One of the things we're hearing a lot of today are calls that particularly when you have somebody who's mentally ill, having a social worker or perhaps somebody trained in psychology to deal with folks rather than have a default to the police. As a former peace officer, how do you feel about that? Do you think that's a safe change?
I think ideas like that are great, but implementation is very difficult because somebody's acting irrationally. They're going nuts. You have to have a first responder there. You have to get somebody there quick. That is going to be the police. So until the criminal justice system evolves to the point where you can have counselors and mental health professionals, like a mental health SWAT team that's on duty with the officers, that sort of solution is probably impractical or difficult. But I fully agree with the idea. I fully do. And so often for officers, you know, officer safety, that's a buzzword in police work, officer safety. Everything an officer does, that they do it from the lens of officer safety. They want to make sure that they go home at night and they don't get hurt. So they somebody's acting crazy, acting irrational, they're going to go in basically looking at that person like a criminal and treating them like a criminal, using weapons on them as though they are a criminal, when in fact maybe they're just, you know, they have mental health issues. So It's in theory, it's a wonderful idea, but I believe the implementation is difficult and probably still evolving.
If I can just, and not to be contentious, but I do think that officers, when they are in that situation, I don't want to say that they absolutely are going to go into a situation with someone who's having a mental health break and treat them as a criminal with weapons. I think that officers, as we've talked about before, in dealing with assessing a situation, the bottom line is someone who is experiencing a mental health break could be dangerous. That, you know, when people are talking about counselors going out and dealing with these situations, I don't think they are addressing that these situations can, in fact, be very dangerous. So I just wanted to throw that out there as well.
Well, as often happens, we ran out of time long before we ran out of material. It's been a very interesting show and I've enjoyed it. We're just not going to finish nearly what we'd intended. I wanted to give you each a very brief time for any closing thoughts. Dominique, did you want to go first? Take about a half a minute or so to a minute, no more?
Sure. I think I just would leave everyone with, remember that police officers, again, are trying to do their job. You may feel that you are being slighted or profiled or treated a certain way. The time on the street or in the interaction with the police officers is not the time to deal with that. Comply with your requests when it comes to don't put your hands in your pocket. Just go ahead and take your hands out of your pocket. Get through the situation. And if something wrong happened, there are recourses for that situation. Keep yourself safe. You're the only one you're in control with is yourself.
And David, would you like about 30 seconds?
Absolutely. There's been a big evolution in the 90s when Rodney King happened. That was one of the very first filming of police misconduct that went viral, so to speak, I guess before things could even go viral, but got all this worldwide attention. And at the end of the state court trial, those officers were found not guilty. Fast forward to modern times, George Floyd, there were all these citizens had their cell phones out. They were citizen reporters. They were filming. They generated a wealth of evidence. And now we get convictions for gross police misconduct. So stay alert. Be a citizen reporter. Don't interfere. Stay at a safe distance. But if you're legally, and if you're standing somewhere in public and you're in a lawful place, you have a right to pull out your phone, film the encounter, and then you're helping society in keeping a watchful eye on the authorities.
Dean Johnson, 15 seconds, no more.
Well, we call this Your Legal Rights, and it's great to educate people about their legal rights. But remember, out there on the street, it all comes down to attitude. And police and citizens who encounter one another on the streets just have to use their common sense and be human beings.
You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco, where we've been discussing the laws, regulations, and norms governing your interactions with the police. Our guests tonight have been Deputy San Mateo County District Attorney Dominic Davis and San Francisco Attorney David Uthman. Our final guest tonight has been all of you. Tonight's show was produced by Dean Johnson and yours truly. In upcoming weeks, we are now developing shows on such topics as the rights of children at school, on juvenile dependency, on where to go if your loved one has developed a dependency on controlled substances, and the laws regarding social media. Again, my thanks to my co-host, Dean Johnson, to our guests for joining us in this enlightening conversation, and especially our thanks to all of you for listening in.